going to cross over to Belfast right now, friends, and to Quentin Oliver. Quentin Oliver being, of course, the premier world-renowned conflict and resolution specialist. And Quentin, I was telling people earlier, you're indeed our go-to person, and we deeply appreciate when there are huge stories, particularly involving, say, Northern Ireland, you have your finger on the pulse. First of all, you're very welcome, Quentin.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you and all your contributors.
Thank you. All right, and obviously to you too. Now, we have spoken many times, and not with any great joy, maybe more embarrassment than anything else, that there's an assembly in Northern Ireland for reasons most of us have forgotten, just decided that they couldn't negotiate, they couldn't get along, and just walked out the door of Stormont in Northern Ireland, and we didn't hear from them again for 3 years. How, Quentin, how did that happen in the first place?
It's all about our conflict, because the conflict on this island between different groups has been so deep and long-running, and in the last 40 years it manifested itself in what we call the Troubles. So the political settlement, the great comprehensive peace agreement, was the 1998 Good Friday Agreement that said we shouldn't just be Irish or British, we could be either or both, and European, and that created a model of sharing power, sharing resources, sharing identities. But of course, that was easy to write, but harder to implement. And so the society here in Northern Ireland has remained divided between those aspirations of Irishness and Britishness. And the power-sharing structures at Stormont, they have worked for more than half of the time in the two decades since the Good Friday Agreement. But they got stuck 3 years ago, and that's when the late Martin McGuinness resigned his post, and that created the gridlock that saw no devolved government for 3 years. But now we're back again, and there's a sense of optimism that pause of 3 years did no good for people in terms of their daily lives, and it removed our voice from the great important debates about Brexit and the future of trade and the future relationships on the island. So we're confident again that we can get back to work now.
Yeah. Is it a coincidence in a couple of weeks, actually by January 31st, swearing on the Bible, it looks like, regardless, Brexit will be implemented. That's it, bottom line. And all of a sudden, just a couple of weeks before the Northern Ireland Assembly is re-entered and is up and running. Is that just...
No, and nor is it a coincidence that the UK general election that gave Boris Johnson's Conservatives such a strong majority was only a few weeks before that. These things have come together and have created huge political pressures. So when the Conservatives won in London, it meant that the DUP no longer enjoyed their special relationships. They held the balance of power, you'll remember, after Theresa May's election of 2017. So it meant the DUP had no special status. They lost two of their 10 Westminster seats, and they had no platform on which to promote their policies and values. So they were very keen to get Stormont back again so that they could take up the post of First Minister. Likewise, there was worry about Brexit. There's fear economically, there's fear socially, there's concern about borders and about restrictions on people's movement and about funding from Europe. So that was a driver. And the forthcoming Irish election was also a driver that's now being slated for Saturday, the 8th of February. And the Irish government wanted to have the North settled before it went into that election. Sinn Féin, it suited Sinn Féin to be back in government in the North so that they can seek votes as a responsible party of government and not just in opposition. Mm. So it suited everyone, the two governments, to get Northern Ireland back on track and the main parties here. And it will certainly suit the ordinary person on the street who wants their health and education and transport and childcare fixed.
Could we add one more spoke to that wheel, as it were? Wasn't this to, I know you mentioned Sinn Féin and their kind of being in limbo and the DUP, but Arlene Foster had, who is now the Prime Minister of the Northern Ireland Assembly, she had a better, much better and stronger position, you know, with Theresa May. And then, you know, Boris Johnson comes along and he says, peg off, I don't need you or your ilk. Just tell us a little bit about that. And, you know, there was tremendous, celebration in the unionist party there about how great it would be that the DUP in Northern Ireland were not only welcome but essential to the government in Westminster, because without them, Theresa May would have been out in her ear long before this.
Yes, and that is a remarkable management that the DUP has organised, because it's a small regional party in UK terms, and it only had 10 seats out of 650 in Westminster. But the arithmetic accident of those 10 votes being critical, as you remind us, from the election of June 2017 gave them a status and a recognition. It gave them a lot of resources back into Northern Ireland. They secured that £1.5 billion confidence and supply arrangement, and it secured them access to decision making at the heart of number 10 and the Westminster establishment.
Right.
But it came to an end because of the changed political arithmetic in the election last month in December in the UK. And Arlene Foster survived that. Now, it is interesting because she might have been toppled. She survived a number of political life-threatening incidents, including the heating scandal. Sinn Féin had asked her to stand down for 6 weeks, which she refused. She took them to the peak of political power, close to number 10, for 18 months, and that ended, and she survived that. She survived the talks that have now put her back as First Minister. So she is a political survivor, and now will be tested in how can she turn away from Westminster and face her Sinn Féin counterpart in government, Michelle O'Neill, and govern. And that's what people are looking for. They're looking for hard, tough economic and social decisions that will govern this place for the benefit of all the citizens.
Yeah. Now we read and we hear, Quentin Oliver, that Britain and the Irish governments, particularly the Irish government, really want to take a vow for getting the Assembly up and running again. Now I want you to just explain to us, because we've been hearing about, you know, the British and Irish governments, being very much involved and having a keen interest in Northern Ireland, and doing something about it and then goes away again for another while. But was and is the story, and I know that many will wish that I wouldn't, or would wish that I didn't bring this up, but was the deal, which at least was theoretically worked out by the Irish and British governments, was that kind of, did that come in handy for the ever-sparring leadership in Northern Ireland that were getting paychecks every week and nothing to show for it? What was that? How significant was that in getting the Northern Ireland Assembly?
It was very significant, and it is a worrying sign for its future sustainability, because it was an agreement between the two governments that was then given to the Northern Ireland parties on a take-it-or-leave-it basis. Now, that's different from previous agreements. The Good Friday Agreement itself, negotiated over 2 years by your Senator Mitchell, Bill Clinton's envoy and talks chair, the Hillsborough Agreement, the Stormont House Agreement, the Fresh Start Agreement, were all negotiated by the Northern Ireland parties and agreed by them. So it was homemade here, with the consent and support of the two governments, and often of the Americans as well, and the Europeans. But this one was effectively imposed by the British and the Irish governments because they needed it to be sorted. They didn't want to have to do direct rule. They didn't want to have other new structures to govern if the people in Northern Ireland couldn't govern themselves. Yeah. And that does give us a worrying shiver that our own parties weren't able to do it themselves, and will they now be able to sit around the cabinet table making those difficult decisions on hospitals and schools and roads in order to build a better, stronger society?
Now, it's unlike me, although someone would say this isn't true either, to put a cat amongst the pigeons, but I just want to ask you, along the way, and when there was no devolved government in Northern Ireland, did anybody in Westminster, in Parliament, say, you know something? We are funding Northern Ireland and they can't even get along with one another. Was there ever that kind of a veiled, or for that matter, unveiled threat saying, you know, we can walk away and let you guys figure it out for yourselves. Was that ever?
It has been mentioned, but not overtly and not in a campaigning sense, because actually the money that it costs to support Northern Ireland is almost as much money as it costs to be in the European Union. So if you compare those figures, the £350 million on the bus is not far off what they send to Northern Ireland every week. So those issues of finance are becoming more on the agenda, and that's also true of the Scottish debate, because if Scotland voted not to go independent in 2014, but if they get their second referendum, part of the English debate will be, well, we still subsidise them, therefore we should let them go. And that will be an issue in any future debate about a border poll on this island, because the question is, will the Irish government be able to pick up that financial burden that the British government has paid for so long?
Yeah.
Or who else will? Will the European government want to see Northern Ireland back in Europe through unity with its favoured member state, Ireland? Mm. So those debates are bubbling away. People don't go to petrol bombs over it, though. People go and pick up the petrol bombs over identity, over culture, over power and status. And that's what we have managed quite well in the last 20 years. We have almost got rid of political violence. That's the great success.
Right.
We have policing that's accepted. We have workplaces that reflect Protestant and Catholics in the labour market. So there are great successes of the last 20 years. Now we need to get together and govern on all those difficult things that Brexit will throw up in terms of our economics. Will we face more to the south, to the rest of Ireland for our trade and the European market, or will we still depend a lot on British trade and British subsidy?
We would like in America to think that you know, our political leaders here, Republicans and Democrats alike, and they don't agree on much, God knows, but they did put forward you know, what appeared to be the strong arm and saying, listen, Brexit, if you do not adhere to the Belfast Agreement and the Good Friday Agreement terms, we're not going to trade with you. Was that taken seriously by, or did anybody notice? Or are you hearing it yourself for the first time?
It is a new important part of the debate, because Brexit happens in 2 weeks. The border in the Irish Sea will be tested. What will those controls and checks be as the lorries queue up at Belfast and Larne to go over to Scotland and Hesham in England? And will it be a real barrier to trade? And then the north-south arrangements, will there be open borders on this island? We think there will be. But what happens when you trade further into Europe? Will people say, well, you're from the UK, therefore you have to pay tariffs on this product that you've brought to us? So those things will have to be tested. And then the wider debates that you mentioned about international trade and what deal Johnson does with Trump will be of great significance. So can Ireland benefit from that through Northern Ireland special arrangements, and can it be a boost to our economy? We like to think so. We like to think that we can look west as well as south to the rest of Ireland and east to Great Britain.
So Brexit, you know, you've mentioned a couple of very touchy subjects there and sensitive areas. As we are now, 12, 13 days out from the implementation of Brexit, which will go through unless the sky falls, have all of these agreements, or any of them, been written in stone? You know, we have, I don't think anybody could accuse, Boris Johnson, Britain's new Prime Minister, of being, you know, favourable to Ireland and to the Republic of Ireland. He's made many snide remarks along the way, you know, which we would consider to be very useful, particularly in the nationalist communities throughout Ireland. But is there, you know, what's the risk factor? What do we not know about Brexit now that might come as a surprise to us on the 1st of February?
Yes, and there is an agreement, for example, on aeroplane flights. But all it takes is one air traffic control computer system to say the UK is different, and therefore a UK plane or a plane flying across the UK or flying across the Irish border is questionable. And if you imagine that about aeroplanes,
wow,
how difficult and how problematic that would be. But think about it in terms of potatoes and tomatoes and beef and fish and so forth. And any one of those could be caught up in a row, and then things would get fractious, and people would lose money, and then would lose jobs and their businesses, and that's when it could get very, very concerning.
And for those, and I've just got back from Ireland, there are those who, with a wink and a nod, are saying, you know, if the UK, and for that matter, if Northern Ireland gets caught in the barbed wire as a result of Brexit, you know, Southern Ireland will do very well, and we can always take care of those less fortunate up the north. Is that, like, totally ridiculous? Isn't the bottom line is we don't have the spelling out of Brexit. There's no sign, there's no piece of paper that is going around to tell us, okay, this is what Brexit will mean for, you know, then fill in the blanks. Isn't it?
Well, yes, the rules are spelled out in the withdrawal agreement and in the agreement with Brussels, but the application of those rules is to be tested. And that's mm-hmm. where we're worried that there will be mistakes or errors or untrained staff will interpret it wrongly. But I don't think your romantic aspiration of Ireland doing well out of it and looking after the North is founded in economic reality, because Ireland itself is very worried about the trade with Britain that it needs. And a lot of the Irish goods travel across Britain. It's a land bridge, they call it. Yeah. And therefore, the Irish economy is likely to take a hit. And that means that any debate about political unity on this island will be held in very harsh economic circumstances, which means that that is hard to predict as to how people will fall in terms of wanting with the UK or move into United Ireland and the United Europe.
Yeah. Now, I just want to ask you, and as a conflict resolution and referendum specialist, which you are, could you take us back to, you know, your earliest days and in the lead up to the Good Friday Agreement? You know, you were you led that yes vote for the Good Friday Agreement in back in 1988. Without the pressure of our good neighbors in Britain, and that being, you know, a key portion of the success of Ireland's North and South. Is there something in the Good Friday Belfast Agreement that addresses situations such as now? Did anybody put in, you know, whereas everything is, you know, we're all happy to be part of the European Union? Is there something, was there anything in the Good Friday Agreement that says now, on the other hand, in the event that Britain decides to withdraw from the European Union, this is what happens? So that's like, was that even?
No, not a word. Not a word about it, because that was unthinkable. And the references to the European Union were references that both countries were members and would remain members. So there was no thought of it being a possibility. So that's why it's been such a shock. And that's why people have tried to match the Good Friday Agreement as an international treaty with the withdrawal agreement from the EU, but the courts have said that the modern law supersedes the law of 20 years ago.
I thank you, because you do, you know, spell out a lot of, you're able to separate the wheat from the chaff, and that's what is very useful and good for us. I just want to, though, before we let you go, what is and where is the concern on the street now that you have the Northern Ireland Assembly up and running again? Has that taken some of the anxiety of what Brexit may or may not mean to the average person. So those who say, you want to know this, look, we don't know about Brexit. What we really want to know is, where is the difference going to be now that we have our own, the Northern Ireland Assembly devolved government is up and running?
Yes, people are confident that at least their voices will be heard and at least their issues will be debated and that they will go beyond their living rooms and their clubs and societies because there is a political forum with all parties represented at Stormont that will represent their views. So they're confident that they'll be debated, but they remain apprehensive about the implications of Brexit because it's such a big constitutional, economic and social change. So there's a worry there. So everyone needs to focus on how it works out in 2 weeks, how it works out next month, next year, and that our interests are protected as far as possible.
Quentin Oliver, sincere thanks for... What's the best way to get in touch with you? Because each time we have you on as a contributor to our programs, a number of people say you don't make it easy for anybody to actually get in touch with Quentin Oliver and how do we get to him?
Well, I'm on all the usual channels. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter,
yeah,
and on email and website. The website is StratagemInt, and that's for international, StratagemInt.com, and I'm happy to communicate with any of your listeners.
INT.com, that seems like that's easy enough. Thank you, and indeed, thank you for the many years, now into decades, in bringing us, you know, the up-to-date and very pertinent news that invariably gets convoluted on our side. I thank you. All right.
Okay. Thank you, Adrian. Good luck.
Okay. And friends, you know, he anything that Quentin Oliver, you know, brings to us in his analysis, it's like it comes from the Bible. And it's always educational, and we're always delighted to bring, you know, the news and the up-to-date. Well, again, you know, he tells it like it is. We've come to the end of a program, and